Welcome to the fifth episode of Avastage's Roadmasters Podcast, Season 2. We interview the GTM leaders from today's most dynamic companies. Their unique insights, hard-earned lessons, and innovative visions are the stories that we bring to you every week. For today's episode, we have Pushkar joining us, who's APJ DevOps Director for TDM. Welcome to the podcast, Pushkar. Could you please tell our listeners a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, thanks, Aditya. Thanks for having me. Guys, I would like to introduce myself. My name is Pushkar Behel. I'm the APJ Revenue Operations Director for Telium. And a bit about myself, look, I was born in India, came to Australia, did my education in Australia, became a CPA with Masters of Accounting. And then I, slowly drifted into the operations world and specializing into sales operations, as well as now revenue operations, which I believe is just a bigger role of sales operations, making sure that all the departments are looked after, which are entitled for revenue growth. So, my experience in terms of revenue operations director has been predominantly very much focused towards, three main things, like getting the operational efficiencies. And that's a broad topic, and it goes through pretty much everything which we do. But again, the new thing which has come through, well, it's not so new, but digital transformation to make sure that every process we build, everything we do is scalable across the organizations. So I help with that front as well. And really making sure that we are breaking through the cross-functional silos in a company. So those three things are the overarching things which we do to initiate or be a catalyst for revenue growth in any organization. About myself, look, I'm a person who loves outdoor activities, enjoy a lot of sports and being out in the sun. That's a little bit about myself.
That's it's great to hear, Pushkar. And I see that you mentioned you had a CPA and an accountant in a PL life and then transitioned into operations. And how was the transition? Because usually, these are two completely different realms, because in one, you have usual past context. After what has happened, you get to see the data and you get to understand the numbers, and then you get to see it. And then operation is more like taking control of your own destiny and trying to fix the processes, right? Like, how was the transition for you?
Yeah. Look, it was quite a natural transition for me. And again, it's just the things in life which actually portray themselves in front of you and you tackle those. Again, as I mentioned, my education, Bachelor's of Commerce in India, moving in, doing my Master's of Accounting, majoring in accounting, and then pursuing the Certified Practicing Accountant, qualification as well. I started off as assistant accountant. That was the first job I got and really opened up my eyes, like what I was studying in accounting came to fruition for me. So when we talk about, then I moved, basically worked through in accounting, got to that management accountant level, really driving the business and helping them understand where we are with the profitability for the business. I then got a little bit of transition role into the finance and operations world. So I did not move straight away to operations. I was doing a lot of finance and operations, and then also got exposure to customer success. So basically a retention role where I was entitled to retain these customers, which were the so-called contractors for the services which we were providing. Then through my network, I got picked up for another role, which was for a SaaS vendor. That's where my journey in sales ops really started. And again, it was really anything under the sun role, which was also comprising of dealing with a lot of finance and tax. But if I may, getting those mentors in your life that can really change your trajectory of where you want to specialize. And that really happened with me at Pegasystems, where I got a manager who was the VP of sales operations. And again, the keenness which I showed towards moving that encompassed my transition. But if I may,
think, right? Just to add that, I think a lot of people today are looking to find mentors in sales operations. So you having done that before, how did you go about it? And how do you think people should go about it?
Yeah, cool. I'll just finish off with my answer, the previous one, in terms of, finance and operations, as you mentioned, one's kind of perceived as more reactive, where you've presented the figures after it's happened, which is the finance world, where the operations one really takes on those figures and provides insights to your leaders, to your revenue leaders, to make those real-time decisions, which will impact the right decision for the company, aka revenue growth or minimizing cost. So that really synchronizes our finance roles as well as our operations role, because you need to be data-driven in both roles. And it's just like really using those and empowers you more with that particular knowledge. So hopefully I've answered your question. The second, what was the question again, if I may
It's
ask you?
about like finding the mentor and how your journey around that
Well,
was.
yes. So mentorship, in my view, comes with two big ticket items. One is, I guess, sorry, the first bit is really the keenness the keenness to actually learn, right? If you are enticed or really are blown away looking at someone who has got the skills, then you would make that particular offer to them to take them under your wing, right? And then the onus of really working hard and doing the hard yards lies on the mentee as well, right? You've got to set up those meetings. You've got to be keen to understand those concepts which the other person's really trying to drive in any business. So that's one. And when I saw this again, when I was an accountant, I had a financial controller who had amazing Excel skills and business, compensation modeling skills, which I really latched on because I was very, very curious of how that happens. The next mentor which I had was at Pegasystems. She was really the core of the sales operations front of how the scaffolding works. The business acumen was immaculate, and that's what I really wanted to get hold of. So that's how I approached my mentors. The other bit, I believe, is really the curiosity which you have at all times. Working with your colleagues, making sure that you are completely understanding what they're doing and where they're coming from. So really your small projects, day-to-day projects, working with different people, your colleagues, which specialize in certain skills, you can easily learn from those skills. And I've not met one person who would actually reject the offer to give you that information to learn. So, again, mentorship is continuous, never stops, and you just keep going, learning from different people.
Absolutely. I think what I really resonate with is how it's like, the onus is on the mentee. I think it's not good enough to just find a mentor, but also follow up and set up consistent sessions to get that feedback. And I think that's where usually things get dropped, right? And also you have to implement what they're saying because you're getting new lessons from someone who's had a long experience. Then you better take it seriously and then go through with it, right? Because if you're not doing that, then they're not going to be wanting to waste their time on someone where they're giving the advice but nothing gets implemented. I think those two are very important. At least has that helped or played a role in your journey, Pushkar? Because that's what it seems like.
Yeah, absolutely. And the other thing is the orchestration of the business environment you're in. You are, as I said before, the mentee is responsible for their own growth. And you've got to orchestrate, get behind the strategic initiatives. And I believe you're not, whatever skills you want to get always flows into the strategic initiatives. So how you place that will give you, or the business will give you, that environment or the investment which is required. Because you're going to in turn give them more from that skill which you acquire. So really, onus is on the mentee. Get behind it, have the curiosity, be flexible. And I think one more attribute is grit, which you've got to have to really benefit from what someone's actually trying to tell you.
Got it. And as someone who has kind of been in both sales operation and the RevOps revolution that has happened over the past decade, what do you think about that, Pushkar? When did you first come across RevOps, and what do you think RevOps today is compared to sales operations of the past?
Yeah, in my view, I've found in the last 2 decades, right, sales operations was the new thing. And everyone's been very quick to understand or recognize that it's a critical function for the business, working with your sales leaders and orchestrating the back end of the business really effectively. Now, once that was recognized, the business really saw, why don't we actually do it for all revenue generating departments for this company or for any company? And this person's role as a sales ops representative is expanded to all revenue leaders. Every department requires processes being effectively placed, as well as the technology to support. So we're all using tools to be more efficient, and someone's got to own that strategy. Someone's got to be, having the vision of how it's best placed in the company. Coming to, rather than just not top of the funnel tools, we're talking right at the quote to cash process, the commissions to be paid for every department. And I believe, stop here, this is the biggest thing, right? KPIs and commission structures are really important for driving operational efficiencies. You cannot, every a human being will be behaving in a certain way, how their compensation structures are based and formulated in a company. And again, revenue operations being on the field, experiencing firsthand what the challenges are or where the friction lies in the departments, they're best placed to actually advise and work very hand in hand with finance to really tweak those commission structures or KPIs to reflect what is most important for the company, but then also what is required for a smooth operations for the company itself as well. So, as I was telling you about the journey from sales operations to revenue operations, everything which a sales ops person does being applicable to the whole company for all the revenue leaders has given birth to the revenue operations team. And I mentioned top of the funnel to the quote to cash process, which is really getting the paperwork in front of our prospects who are going to buy the software or any product, is another operational efficiency we drive. And then the third part is, once that's done, our job doesn't stop. We need to make the customer successful. That's where the companies will drive real value. That's how you get your cross sells and your upsells in your continuous business, and your business becomes very healthy from that. And that's where the operational efficiencies from a revenue operations person also lies. Seeing that whatever other revenue leaders are doing, they're all pulling in the right direction, in the same direction. And that's the job for the revenue operations person.
Yeah. I really love how you are able to do it end to end and show what the full journey from a customer perspective as well as your operational process perspective, right? And one interesting area is, you spoke about commissions in general. And again, in all fairness, as a finance background person, commissions is an expense or cost center for you. Where people in finance usually look at it, hey, how do I keep it to a certain budget and certain percentages? And how do I reduce it year on year so that it's not as high to the overall company's expenses, right? So from there, and coming from operations, how I view commissions as a way to achieve your revenue goals, and being aggressive there to achieve their goals makes sense. Because if you're not aggressive and you don't achieve your goals, you're not going to pay out huge commissions anyway, and your goals are also not hit. So it's only fair that we do that. So it's always a battle between finances cost efficiency and operations growth efficiency, right? Where do you come in? Because you come from a finance background and you have been in ops for almost close to a decade and a half now. So what's your take on that?
Yeah. No, interesting question, right? And these two points in its own right are absolutely correct, right? We are here for the bottom line to be healthy, right? That's one aspect of the situation which finance controls. The other aspect is the people on the field need to be motivated. They need to be completely in a position to feed their families, have a good life, and that's how they perceive a company when they come in, of how the compensation structures are, right? So where the revenue operations needs to kind of get both the arguments in sync is really keeping both in mind, right? So one level, you're looking at retention and attracting the talent which is going to come in. So your quota setting process, your headcount planning. All these need to be in close sync and be in interlock with your finance department, as well as your sales leader or revenue leaders, wherever you are trying to do the headcount planning. So if I take a step back, the harmony and the balance between exciting someone by compensation structures, yet driving a healthy profit and loss statement is our job. And you make sure that both the parties are in completely sync. By that, I mean is they understand where each person's coming from, and you settle in between. I'll give you a small example here. In compensation structures, and I'm not even taking sales representatives into account, right? A normal friction which I've seen is between, say, perspective from the BGR department, the early sales top of the funnel where they're trying to get leads, right? Your marketing department, the SDRs, which flow into the marketing department, as well as your partnerships, really work hard. They're doing events together. They're actually in sync for driving leads. Now, if your compensation structure does not accommodate how the lead flow comes in and who you're going to compensate for those leads, then you have a problem on your hands, right? So that's where the revenue ops person comes in, sees what's the demographic, and appropriately drive the right compensation structure with your finance team. Another example is that we all have revenue recognition, rules to follow through. And there needs to be a process where there's full transparency of how these revenue recognitions apply. Whilst you're deal framing, you need to get on the forefront, said these rules which you're, or these conditions which you're putting in the contract will affect the revenue recognition in that perspective. And yes, some people will compute that to a commission as well. So you're doing your part in providing complete transparency so that both of those points are really taken into consideration for decisions and the company itself. Hopefully,
God.
that answers your question.
No. Wonderful. I think what you really put together that is fascinating is it's a job, right? The job is to balance both. And I think to be able to balance the finance angle to it as well as the operations angle to it is what you're going to, that's when you're really good at your job, right? Because it's not one or other. And okay, let's talk about this from a digital transformation perspective, right? Because that's an area, again, you've mentioned, and I've been through your profile. You've done a lot around that. So, and how does it work, right? Because right now in the market, tech stack is one of the most crucial elements for any RevOps leader that's out there. And getting, because the marketing and sales tech stack is just ever growing, right? Like there is infinite number of tools at this point with the AI coming in over the last year. So how do you look at it from a strategic perspective? Like what's the viewpoint in which you look at your sales and operational tech stack, and how do you optimize it?
Yeah, correct. Okay. So the first big ticket item is that you've got to look at it from a strategic point, as well as you've got to build a vision. The building of a vision really is that what are we trying to achieve? How are we going to go to market better, faster, more effective? And that will really drive your technology stack. Every company is at different stages of maturity, and you've got to kind of bake that in into your analysis of what you're trying to do, right? Nothing, a CRM, a big blown CRM is not applicable for every company in their journey. And you've got to use different tools to kind of accommodate that, right? My guiding principle, again, has always been how to increase revenue and what will be the biggest bang for our buck in coming into the technology stack, right? The second big aspect is if you've got massive operational challenges where people are getting demotivated just by manual work or think or technology stack not being able to help them in their jobs, that is the bigger item as well. So when I take it back, you have a vision, you kind of market from your top of the funnel, really to make your customers effective and drive value from what you've sold to them. You then break it down into steps and you place carefully where each technology is to support that. Then you have the complexity of different roles being using these different tools. And I always say this is, making a sale is not just the account executive's responsibility. It is everyone with inclusive of the support teams, which are helping to make that sale effective. So when you're choosing the technology, it's passing the baton of here's what I have done for you. Now you take it further, right? So you start off with the marketing engine. They're basically, effectively sending out a message to the market which portrays your product to be supreme. That's going to attract the people who are in the buying committees to come to you and ask more questions. How do you entertain those questions? How does it reach to the person who has to reach back to them in no time, right? How are you going faster to your go-to-market? So the in other, a lot of companies, the BGR kind of does that, is a business generation representative who would pick up the phone, give them a call, said, this is what you're interested, this is what we do, and they'll do a quick introduction about your company. Then you pass it on. Okay, they've got interest in that. Let's do a full-blown sales cycle. That's where the account executive comes in, gets the hooks in, explains more about the product, how we can drive value. Once that is set in, they want to know more. You can get your solutions consultant with the technical sales got in. Now, you see the flow. Everyone's doing their little part to kind of then you get the executives in play, and you get the partnerships team to accelerate the deal and surround the deal by partners. Everyone needs tools. You all need tools which are real time, make it transparent, really easy. The interface needs to be completely intuitive. If you get more people to click more buttons, it's not going to work. The processes behind needs to be easy. All that is in your back end, right? Yet alone, I haven't even mentioned if you've got different regions and you've got different languages to cover as well. That's another challenge you've got to incorporate. So choosing a technology is pinnacle for your success. And I would say the last thing I would say is when you choose a technology, you really need to know what the use cases of those will be. How will each person use it? The more it is spread across different teams, the better the technology will give you the value because everyone's on the same platform. There's not much warehousing to be done. And finally, is to really make it adopted, right? We are the change agents for a technology stack to be adopted. It's easy to buy or procure a software. It's harder to get it adopted and get it into the DNA, get it into the process of the company. So if you think about all these things and how this particular technology which you're selecting helps you in achieving those, then you're going to be successful. Otherwise, it's going to be made redundant after a year's time because no one's using it. So I did my best to explain
Yeah,
what.
I think you spoke like a true ops person, which is to look into the future and see whether it's actually going to be worth anything or is it going to be shelfware, and then decide it's worth, adding that into your tech stack. And yeah, that was super insightful, because having the similar conversation with someone else, and it came down to this, right? Basically, hey, if I don't see myself spending at least half a day a week for the next few weeks implementing and ensuring this tech stack is going live and people are adopting it, if I'm not as excited about this, then probably, it's not something worth adding into my to-do list, because ops people have infinite to-do lists, really. There are so many efficiencies you can drive, so many processes you can improve. And that brings me to the next question. So how do you unwind? Because the pressure of an operations role is it's never ending, right? Like even over a weekend, we have a lot of things that we can do as an IC related task.
Correct.
So it becomes very overwhelming. And how do you unwind, and what do you do to get to the introspection of okay, now what can we do better?
Look, I feel that everyone needs to have, and again, this is at a personal level, to have some sort of harmony in your surroundings, some sort of hobby, some sort of task which you actually do, which completely removes you. Because again, for an ops person, it's really easy to get into the weeds, which we always operate in. That's where we are effective. But at the same time, we've also got to bring us back always to the vision of why we are doing a certain task, Right. So when it comes to unwinding, I personally go out for a run where I can collect my thoughts in the morning. Or there's two other things I do. I have a cricket went out to play cricket and also play badminton. So those are my sacred spots. I also am trying to learn to play the piano, which also gives me a lot of peace. And I feel those 15 minutes off, even in whilst you're in back-to-back meetings, brings you back to what you were there to actually do.
Got it. That brings us to the next section, which is the closing questions. So the first one is like, are there any specific resources or books that you would recommend for someone to scale their career in RevOps?
Yeah, sure. It's no more exactly on RevOps, but I think it's generally, actually, I changed my answer. It is the five dysfunctions of a team. I found that really, really helpful as a book. And really, it tells you about, effectively facilitating a meeting. What really stuck for me in that particular book is if you are running a meeting and you've had a monologue for 30 minutes and everyone's just listening and no one's actually asked a question or there hasn't been a debate, then effectively you should think that you failed in that meeting. Our job as revenue ops person is to bring out all the insights which people or different revenue department leaders have in that particular meeting and contribute to that. So that one book I would really recommend. The other one is The Crucial Conversations, is really to be empowered to have those tough conversations. Again, our job is always trying to come from a point of actual versus targets, and it's a hard conversation when we aren't performing well. But it's to take to that one team facilitation and have those crucial conversations in a way which is polite, but yet compelling to make sure that we're taking those actions, those hard tasks for execution.
So those are wonderful recommendations. The first one is also my favorite, and like, trying to actively avoid that when building a team and running a team is super important. And yeah, I'm gonna look into crucial conversations because I have heard that suggestion from a couple, but I think I'm just gonna take it as part of the stream.
One more which comes to mind very quickly is the ikigai is a new one. It's a Japanese term, and again, I work very closely with the Japan team. So ikigai is just basically finding your purpose. And again, it's hard to do that in a lifetime, but some people have found out, and it's a direct correlation for living longer as well. So if that's a good read as well.
Absolutely. And what do you have in mind for people who are in finance or accountancy today and trying to transition into an operations kind of a role? What advice would you give them?
Yeah, look, I feel that finance people are very, very in sync with the operations role. Where the differences lie, well, actually, go back is you have the skill because you're data driven. That's the core to any operations role, revenue operations role, because you're trying to provide insights in any situation possible to get the best result. So you aren't letting anyone fly blind. That's one synchronization. But the pivot is not to be reactive, to be proactive. And also the result is not always black and white. As you say, EBITDA is 20%, doesn't change. It's a black and white number. But whereas in the operations role, whilst you're in the field trying to work out, you have limited information, or you have 80% of the information, let's say. It's always gray. There's other factors which you've got to bake into your thinking while suggesting the best answer. So it's gray area which you will be operating in, and you need to recognize that it's always going to be gray, and you're doing the best with the amount of knowledge which you have at that point of time. The final thing I would say is, and I'll, passionate about adoption, and you go with seven different ways and seven times. So seven times, seven different ways. If you feel that you've explained a process or a tool or whatever you're presenting one time and everyone's understood it, that assumption is incorrect. You need to continuously be on top of that to present this in seven different ways, given that your audience has different angles to it, and you need to absorb that. While presenting, you need to come at it from different ways, different angles, so that it becomes really, really compelling for them to kind of get on board. So yeah, I'm really
Got it.
passionate about it.
I think a lot of people might reach out to you to just learn about what you've said. And that's a final question, right? Like, how can people reach out to you and connect with you?
Yeah, sure. Look, I'm available on LinkedIn. I've also joined a revenue ops co-op Slack channel as well. You can reach out to me there, or again through my personal email address, pushkabel@gmail.com. Happy to connect with like-minded people, discuss any topics relates to business or personal. I'm more than happy to connect.
Thanks a lot, Pushkar, for coming into the podcast. I think I learned a lot personally, and I think some of the advice that you gave were also very actionable.
Well, thank you very much. Thanks for having me. It was a pleasure.
Yeah, well, that brings us to the end of this insightful episode of Growth Masters. Big thanks to Pushkar for sharing his experiences and valuable insights. Remember, you can tune in every week to learn more from game changers driving hyper-growth companies across the globe. Growth Masters is brought to you by LSTH, your trusted partner for transforming the way business handles sales compensation. I'm your host, Adit, signing off.